Blog Talk Radio.
My investing story. Hi, my name is Ann McMillan. I am the master builder, helping you to build a wealthier and better and stronger life in every area of your life, especially when it comes to investing. I'm very excited today. Let's say that
every Ann.
Day. Yes. Yes, Ione McNeil. Ione, were you saying something?
Sorry. I couldn't hear you, so I thought they couldn't hear you. Sorry about that.
I think they can hear. Okay.
I can hear you now.
Okay, thank you. So that's of course my co-pilot, Miss Ione McNeil, wanting to make absolutely sure she can hear. And we want to make sure also that you can hear, because we have a very exciting show here for you today. But let's talk a little bit about our organization before we bring on our very special guest, Miss Paige, and she's going to tell you a little bit about herself. And we are volunteers with Better Investing. And if you have been following us, you may have heard that Better Investing was established in 1951. Yes, before I was born. But anyway, I digress. Better Investing was formed in 1951 as a 501c3 organization, and the organization has helped over 5 million people from all walks of life to learn how to improve their financial future, and that happens by providing unbiased investment education and powerful online stock analysis tools to create successful lifelong investors. And with that, I'm going to turn the program over to Ione McNeil, and she's going to share with you a little about our guest. Ione?
Hello. So we're excited to have our guest here today, Paige. Paige, how do you pronounce your last name?
Paige Radke.
Radke. Yes. So I met Paige, was it a month ago, Paige?
Oh, I think it might have been a little since we did the last video, or I mean, from the beginning of the program. I think we started back in
July,
or maybe June.
June 8th, maybe 15th, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
So Paige and I met at the beginning of the stock market game, and she was not an advisor, but she was a resource. And she was assigned to one of the teams. Is it Running Rebels? No, it's...
No, I worked with Neighborhood House.
Neighborhood House, Milwaukee Neighborhood mm-hmm. House. So I actually just spoke with Ms. Cynthia Jasper 2 days ago, and she said very high things about you. she was... I want to say wild. surprised by your level of commitment and coming to meet with them, you know, on your bike and just help with the trading and the understanding of stocks and bonds and mutual funds and just the overall stock market game. So thank you, Paige, for joining us on our My Investing Story. I don't want to give away why I invited you. I think when I ask you some of the questions, the audience will be able to get why I think that you are a perfect guest. But let's go back to your beginning. What is your original beginning memories and relationship with money?
So, again, I think, you know, sort of alluding to what you're getting at here is one of the first questions that you asked me when you were talking was, you know, when did I start investing? And the answer really is I was pretty much investing from the time that I was born, whether I was aware of it or not. So my family was pretty much aware of the fact that they wanted me to go to college and you know, whatever I decided to do in my future, they wanted me to be prepared to do that. So not only did my parents start some investment funds for me in order to pay for education, but my grandparents also started some investment funds. So recently I was actually visiting my mom and I found a letter from my grandpa that was dated 3 days after I was born, where they had put in some money into what they called the Munchkin Trust. Munchkin, you know, being like Wizard of Oz, and we, you know, the whole thing.
I love it.
Yeah, so my grandparents had this Munchkin Trust where all of their grandkids were the beneficiaries of that trust. So they didn't necessarily know what we were going to be doing in the future or how much money we would be needing. But essentially what they did was say, okay, you're born now. We're going to put some money away for you. And then going forward on your birthday or for Christmas, they would also add money for their grandkids. So, you know, that one was a little bit more hands-off. I didn't even fully understand what was going on there. But again, I mean, my family started investing for me and for my future basically by the time I was born.
Excellent, because like you also alluded to, when I when you were a guest on Bob Wynn's Office Hours, and mm-hmm. you and your partner talked about careers and finance, and I asked you that question, the thought that popped into my head was, you are the epitome of privilege, right? Because
yeah.
to be born into a situation where everybody else on the call more often than not is trying to get there, you were actually born into your parents and your grandparents investing for you. And not just mm-hmm. for you, but, you know, we'll get to it a little later, but raising you to read your own stock statement. And
yep.
anybody that may not know the difference between my voice and Paige's voice, Paige is, what will we call you, a Midwestern young white woman, Paige?
I would say that's a pretty accurate, you know, I have the pretty standard Midwestern accent.
Okay,
I grew up in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, so it's very, very, like you said, Midwestern. I'm a white young woman who, like you said, was very, very much born into a world of privilege.
Right. And so the great thing about us being able to bring you on and be candid and talk about this is because, like, you know, I also mentioned, and you reiterated it the last time we spoke, is that we're bringing it up and making it plain, so that those of us without that type of privilege can provide privilege to ourselves and to our next generation and next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it all starts with investing. You know, it was interesting because before we got to that part of your history, you were talking about careers and finance. Mm-hmm. But to ask you, well, when did you start investing? Now, I don't even know if you made the connection, but because you were born into it, you actually was a lot more exposed than you probably thought. So could you probably talk about how investing was normalized for you growing up with that type of environment and background?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big thing is for my entire life, I was always told, hey, you have to go to college. You have to figure out what you want to do. And a big part of that was the fact that my parents actually had money that was invested for me to go to college. So even at a young age, I would sit down and, you know, I knew that my dad was a small business owner. He was a dentist. And so they put us on his payroll in order to help us save money for college. And in turn, I would go with my mom to my dad's office, and whether it be doing the landscaping work, you know, my mom would make us weed. Like, we actually had to work for the income that we were supposed that we were generating. So we would help weed the gardens. We would help sort the files. You know, sometimes we were just running around in the office. But the reality was is that they, you know, they would say, hey, you have to come and help us. And this is why, and, you know, you have to do these chores or you have to do these things because we're putting this money away for you to be able to go to college and for you to have a future, and you have to contribute to that. So we always knew that it was something that was happening. And then as I got a little bit older and I could understand what investing was and what the markets were, my mom would sit down with me and say, okay, these are the accounts that you have. This is, you know, she'd talk about how they were taxable by the, you know, once I had an income and I could understand that, you know, and even then as I was going through high school, my high school had a student investment club. So it wasn't an actual funds investment club. It was all virtual, similar to the stock market game. But even in high school, I was exposed to say, okay, this is what stock market investing is. And we had a teacher, and I remember so clearly, he brought in like a framed certificate from that was his child or his one share of Disney, because that was what you would get for kids. And so they had that up in his kid's room growing up. And so just another example of how it was so normalized. And then even at a certain point, it was, okay, this is how much money you do have. And you have to make a decision about how you want to best use it. So it wasn't just, here's the money you're provided for school. It was actually having some accountability and understanding of where that money came from, and then making sure that we used it appropriately to then end up where I am today.
Well, I like what you said, because what you made me think about is the fact that sometimes I think parents can get into the mindset of, oh, I want to do this for my child. And as if when that child turns 18 and you hand them over this money, or you hand them over this account, or you hand them over this trust, that they're going to magically know what to do with it. If you have not been sharing all of what money can do, paying bills, be invested, be given to charity, be given to tithes at your church, then the limited exposure could actually warp, I think, a child and a young adult's view of money. Can you talk to me about maybe when you noticed the difference between maybe your upbringing and relationship to money to even other people, your friends and classmates that look like you, but they may not have been even born into having an investment account or having a trust?
You know, honestly, it wasn't something that we talked about. I think that when it comes to money and when it comes to investing, it ends up being it's a sensitive topic. People don't really like to ask other people, what are your, you know, how much money do you have invested, or, you know, what's your salary even? So I think money is such a taboo topic for so many people that even though my mom and I were talking about it, you know, sitting on the floor in her home office, it was not something that you brought to other people's attention. So it was just something that was sort of, this is money, this is a private thing, it's not something that you talk about. So, you know, I have no recollection of talking to any of my peers about, you know, how much do you have saved for college, or, you know, what are you doing here and doing that? It hasn't been until recent years, now that I'm already, you know, entrenched in the investment world, that people start coming to me and saying, well, what should I do? Or, you know, they get a new job and things like that. So it's definitely been more of an adult aspect, and something that I even work with my friends to this day to try to say, you know, when I ask you how much money you make, it's not a comparison. It's not anything like that. It's simply because I'm trying to help you or try to figure out, you know, what might be the best path for you.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we have two quick questions in the chat. One is, and, you know, let me know if you want to say a range for this answer or not, but someone asked, how old are you?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so I'm 29 years old.
Oh, 29.
So just turned. So I'm not quite 30, but I'm
Oh,
there.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And the other question is, I think I know the answer to this, but I don't want to assume. Are you a member of BI? And if not, when did you hear about Better Investing?
So I'm not a member of Better Investing, and I actually heard about it for the first time when Anne came on one of the very first stock market game pilot program webcasts that I went on. And so Anne came on and gave a brief description about it, and Bob Wynn talked about it quite a bit as well. So that was my first exposure, and after hearing about it, I dug a little deeper, you know, read on the website. So that was my first time hearing about it. And prior to that, I actually had no idea that it even existed.
Right, right. Well, can we move into what your profession is actually now? And I wanted to know how much of your career decision is probably a part of your personality and or your early exposure and just comfortability with money.
Yeah, I would say probably a pretty good amount. So I work in investment management. And essentially what I do is primarily work with individuals who have put all this money away, you know, sort of set it and forget it over their lifetime. And now they're getting to the point where whether they have a new job or whether they're retiring or, you know, they have some sort of life change that's going on. Then we step in and help with that investment management. So it's sort of like a hybrid between managing people's investments and then also doing some financial planning, wealth management planning. And then also just, you know, for a lot of people, like we were saying, money is a taboo topic. It's something that they're not comfortable dealing with themselves. And so that's where we step in because we have that comfort. And so the reason, so I ended up where I am today. I had no idea when I was younger that this was the route I wanted to go. I always knew that I wanted to work in business in some sense of the world. But then as I started to go through school, I studied economics. And even with that, it was like, well, what do I want to do with that? So then I got a master's degree in finance analysis, and I went through an investment management certificate program that was a very, very in-depth look at how to analyze businesses, how to read financial statements, all of those things. And when I was doing that, I had a professor who, you know, taught me pretty much everything I know about investing, other than what my parents taught me, of course. But he was really, really pushing me into a more analytical role. So, you know, we talked about the careers in finance, careers in investments, and the roles that he was pushing me towards that, you know, there's no doubt that I probably would have been good at it, but it was the type of roles where you really just, you know, go into work and you put on some headphones and you sit in a cubicle and you
crunch
read
numbers.
And you type and you crunch numbers and you play around with spreadsheets, which I could do that for a certain period of time probably, but ultimately I am like beaming with energy and, you know, I like talking with people. And most importantly, I think that I really have like a passion for just helping people. And I know it sounds super cheesy because it's like that's what all people say. But really, you know, I kind of looked at it from the standpoint of how can I take all this education? How can I take this background that I have? And, you know, what I almost call it my superpower. So it's like, how can I take my superpower that I generated and use it for good? And I just couldn't see myself sitting on Wall Street trading or, you know, I don't see myself in a position where I want to help people with a lot of money make a lot more money. I want to help people, like you were saying, who maybe aren't comfortable with investing, you know that they have to do it and have successfully done it over a period of time, But now that they have to start spending that money, all of a sudden it's like freeze up. So how can you help people get comfortable with that? And then, you know, even taking it a step further, helping people get that foot in the door. And so at some point in time, they do feel comfortable, or they feel comfortable retiring.
Well, that's excellent. I'm actually, let's say that the next 5-10 minutes is our first conversation with Paige, mm-hmm. consulting. What would you tell a beginner investor, someone that is anywhere between 25 and 40, mm-hmm. and they know they need to start, but they don't know where? What type of advice would you give to them, books to read, resources to point them in the direction of?
Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing first is anytime I sit down with someone for the first time, it's really just about generating that level of vert and getting to know them. Because I think with a lot of people, you know, the very first thing that you want to try to figure out is what is your tolerance for risk. So if you're looking at somebody who is like 25 to 40, you know, a lot of times I get people that say, well, isn't there a lot of risk involved with that? Or, you know, can't I lose that money if I put it in the stock market? And so I think with people that aren't necessarily used to investing, the first thing that you kind of have to drill down to is how comfortable are you with taking on a certain level of risk in a portfolio? And I would say that most people have no idea, because it's not a question that anybody gets asked, or not a question that anybody focuses on in their, you know, regular lifespan. And I think that it's funny, because most people either say, I don't like risk at all, or they say, I really want to take on a lot of risk. But the reality is most people fall somewhere right in the middle.
Exactly.
So that's the first thing. And so if it's somebody who has, you know, is really a big risk taker, then it's a matter of saying, okay, you know, you might really want to take on all this extra risk, but by being a little bit more methodical and being a little bit more, just like I said, set it and forget it, you can actually do a lot better than sort of chasing that risk or chasing those returns. And then on the flip side, if you look at someone who says, I don't want to take on any risk at all, you have to remind them what this money is for. So it's all about time horizon. So if you're putting money in a 401k, and you're 25 years old, you're not going to be using that for at least another 65 years. So if, no, sorry, not 65, but 45.
45
years. Yeah. So, you know, when you look at something like that, you might say, oh, yeah, no, I do not want to lose money. But the reality is, who cares if you lose some money over the next 2 years? As long as you're continuing to put that money away, you get to take advantage of the fact that you lost, and then it grows. And so, you know, really the first conversations I have are all about just what is your comfort level, and then how can I make sure that without pushing you outside of your limits or pulling you to be too risk averse, you know, how can I sort of find this balance between chasing returns, not getting any returns, and sort of looking for that smoother ride overall?
Really glad that you brought up what I like to call now the runway, because mm-hmm. I don't think that people understand the relationship between risk and runway. Risk mm-hmm. in the time period, and in as much as they have a certain preconceived notion about the stock market over the long term, if you're investing over 5, 10, 15 plus years, you are going to get your greatest return in the stock market. And when we say stock market, we mean stocks, mutual funds, you know, ownership in companies or ownership in index funds or ETFs, not necessarily bonds, not necessarily CDs, you know. Mm-hmm. Another question I have, too, is what advice would you give to someone that may be unrealistic about how much they want to make mm-hmm. and the time frame they want to make it? And they're risk averse. I mean, yeah. I know you've had conversations with people that's like, wait, we can't do magic for you, you know, without a Bernie Madoff scheme, you know.
So, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how do you get somebody to just kind of ease up and realize how much time they have and how much risk they can probably take on?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a phrase that I'm going to steal from one of my mentors. And what he always likes to tell people is, you know, stop acting like you need all of this money today. And
hold on. Ms. Ann, are you on?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just
because this is the prime time where you come in and say, can you say that again, please?
Yeah, so it's stop acting like you need all of this money today. And I think that's an important piece to remember, because if you, like you were saying, if you are super risk averse, that you want to have these huge returns, you know, the question is, well, why don't you want to take on risk? Because you don't need this money today, and over the long term, this money will grow and do what you're expecting it to do. So, you know, so for someone like that, it's just a matter of, you know, if you're looking for these huge, huge returns, but you're not willing to take on any risk, you know, not only do you need to accept that you can take on risk because of your time frame, but you also need to focus on the fact that taking on too much risk really isn't going to give you the returns that you're looking for in the short term, unless you're like very, very involved, actively trading, and that's your job. So, you know, for those people, and even people that say, I don't want to take on risk at all, you know, the whole idea is you're not investing for tomorrow. You're investing for many years down the line. And so when you look at a given year and say, well, I lost 2%, it's like, yeah, well, you didn't lose 7, you lost 2. That's great. You know, or, well, my friend's portfolio was up 20% this year. And it's like, well, yours was up 18, and I don't know why you're complaining. You know, so it really is just a matter of setting expectations. And like I said, stop acting like you need all the money today, because you don't. And if there is money that you need today or that you need directly tomorrow, well, then we're going to have a different strategy for that. And so really it's just a matter of setting expectations and then sort of making sure that when something happens and all of a sudden they have a different idea of what they should be doing or what they, you know, want to have happen, sort of bringing them back to say, well, remember, this money is for that, this money is for this. So stop acting like it's the same. And I think that's the biggest piece of advice that I would give to people like that.
I absolutely love what you just said. Stop acting like you need all of this money today. I think unintentionally there's a pun there, because for many of us that live beyond our means day to day, week to week, month to month, I think that phrase also applies to us, because by saying that to an overspender, what you're really saying is recognize what you need today and start to put some things off for tomorrow and for 5 years from now and for 10 years from now. So I like what you said, because I think unexpectedly it speaks to moderation, but it also speaks to planning. And just being able to address the stress and the anxiety of, number one, probably realizing where you are, and number two, doing what you need to do to get where you really want to go. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just wrote that down. So I really
yeah, well, again,
I will be using that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to just mentioned to take a commercial break and talk about the organization for a moment and just remind everybody. And Paige, thank you for mentioning Better Investing again, because we do want people to know that we are volunteers with Better Investing, and our guest is a financial planner, and she's here as a result of the stock market gain for youth, and talking about privilege. But I just want to, you know, I'll let this help, the two of you can continue that conversation. I'd just like to talk about our Better Investing South Florida chapter, where we are volunteers with this wonderful organization, and just a little bit about our chapter. The South Florida chapter of Better Investing covers the Gold Coast, Treasure Coast of South Florida, and all the way up to Fort Pierce and down through Key West. And we have currently, our events are online, so if you're listening either on Zoom or Facebook Live or any of those places, you can go to betterinvesting.org and find information about our chapter. You can also join our Facebook group that's called Better Investing Southeast Florida Chapter. Regardless of where you're listening to us, there are chapters all across the United States that you can get involved in. And again, because we are volunteers, we're not selling any stocks. We're not day traders. We don't invest in penny stocks or any of those things. So I just wanted to share that because I think it's very important that people understand who we are, but also who we're not. We're just volunteers talking about the whole idea of my investing story. We want to thank Paige again. And we didn't really talk a little bit about who she is. She said a little, but I'd just like to just share just a little bit more, Ione, about Paige. She is a financial advisor and an associate and works on research teams at Landis and Company, LLC, in Milwaukee. Paige received her Bachelor's of Arts in Economics and Spanish, wow, from the University of Wisconsin, and a Master's degree in Financial Analyst from the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. While working towards her Master's, Paige also completed the Investment Management Certificate Program. We talked about that a little bit. And so, Ione, back to you, but I'd also like to have Paige just share a little bit more between the two of you about this whole idea of living a life of privilege and what thoughts and comments or suggestions she may have for those who are not privileged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think when, especially when we look at the world right now and you hear our leaders on the news talking about how great the stock market is doing and where the Dow is and where the NASDAQ is. And, you know, really he's speaking to people of privilege. So as a leader in our society, if you only tout where we are from a stock market standpoint, you're completely forgetting the fact that there's a huge group of people in our country and in the world that are not participating in the stock market. And, you know, I think the big thing is that even just looking at, like, from a privilege standpoint, I started my first job, or my first real job, which is the company that I'm still at now. And in my very first meeting as an intern, I was told, you have access to the 401k. So for the listeners that don't know, a 401k is basically an employer-sponsored plan that allows you to automatically take money out of your paycheck and put it into an investment vehicle. A lot of companies will do what's called a match. So they'll match whatever you put in up to a certain percent. So even in my first opportunity receiving that, you know, it wasn't my first job. It was my 10th job, but it was the first job that they actually gave me access to that. And I think a lot of people will say, well, I just got this job. I need this money. Why would I want to put it away for something that's so far down the line? But, you know, going back to the privilege, because I did have the privilege of being exposed to all of that at such a young age, it wasn't even a question of whether or not I would start contributing to my 401k. It was an automatic reaction to say, well, of course, I'm going to put in whatever the lowest number is I can match, and I'm just going to set it and forget about it. And so, you know, just from that standpoint, if you look at a lot of other companies or a lot of the people that do, you know, if you work in the gig economy, if you're driving Uber or things like that, or if you are working at a restaurant, you know, there's a lot of these other, you know, sort of what we now call essential workers who don't have access to those same types of automatic retirement, automatic saving vehicles. And so, you know, I find it very, very frustrating when that becomes the focus of how a country is doing, because that does not speak for the vast majority of the country. You know, so just going back to me a little bit is I view it, and this is something that I've been saying for years, you know, I got to go to college and I got to do it debt-free, which not a lot of people get to say, even if they come from a place of privilege. And that had to do with my parents investing for me when I was very young, my grandparents helping out. It had to do with choices that I made, you know, in terms of deciding to stay here in Wisconsin rather than going out of state. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. But, you know, I always say that if I can help somebody send their grandkids to college, or if I can help somebody, you know, pass that along, that really to me is what I deem as success for my life, because, you know, I'm already passing that on to my nieces and my nephews and my friends and, you know, other people in my family, but we already have that exposure. So, you know, a big thing for me is how can we increase access to financial markets? And I think, you know, the first thing is making sure that people are aware of them and comfortable with them. And the second thing is just the education portion. I think it is so huge, which is, you know, I think it's great what Better Investing does. I wish I had known about you guys sooner, because really it sounds like it's amazing, right? And just the whole idea of you don't have to have a lot to save a little. And so what if you can only put in $10 a week, you know, that's one takeout meal. So, you know, just sort of changing that perspective to say you don't have to have a lot of money to start investing and to start saving. If you start putting in this little bit here and there and you just sort of forget about it, one day you're going to look and say, wow, I can pay for my grandchild, or I can pay for my niece to get this degree in whatever they might want. It doesn't even have to be in a full university. It can be a yoga instructor. It can be starting a new business. It can, you know, there's so many different things that you can do. And I think that, you know, just going back to the idea of privilege, is so many people look at investing and they see it as something that's reserved for rich people. But the reality is that rich people are only rich because they invested. And so if you start now and you start early, whatever you can put away, you are going to be that rich person one day. And I think the more people that have access to those financial markets, the better our country and the world is going to be overall. So it's something I really work towards.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Paige. I'm actually going to take this time to bring on one of our stock market game students. Exactly. So, they, of course, they on page. We're going to bring him on. So, Deke, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay. Let's turn on your video, and you can join us here. So, Sadiq, can you introduce yourself to us, please, and let us know where you're from, the school you attend, and also how did you enjoy participating in the stock market game this summer?
So, I'm Sadiq Bonamassi. I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I went to Tokyo Middle School. Now I'm in high school. I like the stock market game. It was fun. It was cool. It was like a good experience. I learned a lot from it, and like taught me more. And I even started investing myself. So that's a good. It was really good opportunity to put me in.
Well, the beautiful thing I like about your story, Sadiq, is that you're actually first generation in your family to be born here in America, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So both of your parents are West African?
Yes.
Okay. So talk to us about the book that your advisor gave you to read and what actions you took from starting to read that book.
So my advisor told me to read the book, something with Stay Broke. or something like that.
Read this or stay broke.
Yes, and I learned like to save your money. Like I even have a job myself. Like I work at a trampoline park, and like I benefit from like something that I learned from that book is to like start saving your money. Because I'm the type of person who likes to use money, so like saving your money and then investing it too is good because that money builds up, stuff like that.
So when did you start your when did you open up your brokerage account?
I opened it this year, like when just right before the stock market game started.
And where are you? Where do you have your account?
I have at Charles Schwab.
And tell the people what you did just this past weekend or week.
This past weekend, I opened a custodial Roth IRA, so I can put some of my money in it because my job doesn't offer a 401k. So
you're going to set it up on how often are you going to be investing?
Bi-weekly, like 25 each bi-weekly.
Well, that's excellent. Do we have, Paige, you have anything you want to ask Sadiq?
Yeah, so I guess my main question for you is, first of all, just because with the stock market game, it was very short term and it was very, you know, how can I make the most amount of money in a little bit of time? But, you know, from your standpoint, how are you doing that investing? So sort of have you picked a lot of different stocks? Are you sort of playing around with it and setting and forgetting? Or are you just setting it away and forgetting it? And then also, how did you learn about doing a Roth IRA?
So, like right now, I'm just like putting money in like my brokerage account so like
mm-hmm.
I can like save up and like can invest in a stock. So I don't know what stock to. I'm like researching about like different types of stocks right now. So once like I build up my money, now like invested. And also Ioni, one of my advisors named Emmanuel has I think talked about me to Ioni, and she hit me up and like we talked, and she told me to do the custodial Roth IRA to have a job and put like the money from me and it can build like once I have like a 401k at a different job or something like that.
Mhm. And tell Paige the index fund we chose. You might have to check your phone.
I think it's called like. The SWPPX index fund.
So it's the Charles Schwab version of the S&P 500. So, yeah, definitely has
okay.
The most return and the least amount of cost. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I think that's very cool because even, like you said, you just started high school, you know, and so while I knew my parents were putting money away for me when I was in high school, I know my job that I had, you know, I put some money away just sort of as like mentally as spending money, but it all went into a savings account. So the fact that you went and opened a custodial Roth IRA on your own and, you know, just the long-term potential of that from the, you know, just the standpoint of how flexible those accounts can be and the types of ways that you can use it and the things that you can do with that. I really commend you because I think that's a very smart move and you're going to be thanking yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 25 years. And, you know, so the big thing is, you know, that dollar cost averaging. So if you're just putting that money away and you're buying that ETF, one day you're going to look at that account and say, holy cow, how did that happen?
Thank you.
And I will also add, so Deke's team, which was represented by the 500 Black Men of Madison, Wisconsin, came in fourth place underneath the Florida team. And so for all of the winners, we are opening up a credit union account with them to put their winnings in specifically for them. And this credit union has a program called Make the Grade, where if you send in your last year's report card before the end of the month, you're going to get an extra $25 added to your account. So That's going to be for Sadiq and all of the other kids that was underneath the Florida contingent and played the stock market game.
You want to share the name of that institution to give them some
Velocity Credit Union, located here in Palm Beach County, Florida.
Thank you. Just want to have the world to know. Thank you, Velocity.
Well, thank you so much, Sadiq. I am so glad that you were able to be on. Your story was amazing. You did phenomenally on your team. All of the advisors had great things to say about you. And when I met you, I could tell because you wasted no time to start implementing some of the things that we talked about. And, you know, as everybody heard, you, with the help of your parents, were able to open up your own custodial Roth IRA and set it up for a biweekly contribution in an index fund. You just started ninth grade, what, this week, last week?
Yeah.
So, again, congratulations to you, Sadiq. You're going to be definitely headed places. You're a very smart young man.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So, Paige, as we wrap up, I do have a few more questions to ask. One of them is, what type of book would you recommend a beginner investor to read to get started?
Ooh, I mean, that's a good question. I think, you know, as far as, like, what type of book, I think the number one thing is that you have to know the very, very most basics. So, I mean, even just like stocks for the long run, I think it is definitely a good read. But even just like any book that sort of helps you feel like you're more understanding of how the world works, right? Because when you're looking at investing, it's not necessarily all about, okay, what do I think this one stock is going to do? What do I think this one area of the market is going to do? You know, that's something that you end up doing very much in a professional sense. But I think that when it comes to investing, the most important thing is really just doing it. And so, you know, I don't actually get that question very often. Most of the questions I get are, you know, if I'm aspiring to be a stock market manager, what should I read? But I think that, you know, stocks for the long run is a good one. And then a book that I'm totally blanking on the name, but another one would be Factfulness. So if you're familiar with that book, Factfulness is basically a book that goes through some of the main basically myths that people have about the world and have about where we are in the world. And so you'll hear a lot of things that'll say, you know, the United States is done growing, or the stock market can't go any higher, or, you know, we're completely maxed out on technology and productivity is never going to increase. So you hear a lot of things about the future that point in a really negative direction. And what this book Factfulness does is tells you essentially why you're wrong. it lets you have a better understanding of where you fall in the world, like total spectrum. And so you might look and say, well, you know, I'm too poor to invest, or I am too lazy or busy or whatever it might be. But I think it really just changes how you're going to view the whole world, and you'll start to realize that there's a lot more positive things, and you've actually come a lot further than you might think in the past 50 years. And I think that just, for me personally, even, it gave me a lot of comfort and, you know, taking away some of the pessimism and start focusing on the fact that the world is constantly changing and it's constantly shifting, and we are moving towards a better direction overall.
Now, is it possible you could put both of those books in the chat for those?
Yes, it's in there.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah, it's in there. So, and I want to thank you for that, Paige, because you actually just mentioned two books I had never heard of. But
really?
Your description of them makes them very interesting to me. Again, Stocks for the Long Run by Jeremy Siegel, Seigel, and Factfulness, one word, by Hans Rosling, Rosling. The next question I have is, how has investing changed your worldview as a person?
That's an interesting question. So I think it has, I mean, it's changed everything about who I am as a person. Generally, you know, I remember thinking back when, you know, I studied economics, which is very, very much in the sphere. It's all. And so, you know, I sort of came into the world with this theory of how the world is supposed to work. And I think, you know, the big thing from working in investments and working in the stock market has been that theories are good and all, but in reality, you rarely see those things play out in a meaningful way or like an actionable way. So, you know, from that standpoint, I think that it really just, it made me start trusting the process more. And start trusting myself more. So, you know, I'm very much a person who thinks, you know, I really need to see something to believe it. I want to quantify everything. I download data into Excel spreadsheets for fun. I am a nerd. So, but I think that, it, you know, from an investing standpoint, it really just taught me to sort of trust in myself and trust in the process. And, you know, I used to say that I wasn't sure that I wanted the stock market to rule my everyday life. You know, I was like, I don't want to live and die checking what the market is opening and closing at. And I think the reality is that I don't, you know, even though I'm working in it every day and I'm going to be checking what the market is doing every day. You know, this week was a great example where it doesn't faze me anymore. You just, you know, it just taught me to sort of let go of this need to control things and understand that there are some things that are outside of my control. And all that I can control is how I react to it. And I think that the stock market in and of itself is, you know, a perfect example of that. Because you can research and you can read and you can dive deep all day long, but that's not going to change how something else is going to react. So, yeah, I think that would be the big thing. Trusting in myself, trusting in the process, knowing that you can't control everything and, you know, trying to be as strategic as possible while also just allowing yourself to sort of go with the flow.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that, but I wholeheartedly agree to everything you're saying, though, because what you said actually just made me think about my own investing journey and how over time I did the same thing. Like I just this year hit 20 years of being a member of Better Investing, and the comfort level that I have with investing is much different than when I started out. However, when I started out, I was like, you know, Better Investing at the time, it was actually called NAIC, National Association of Investors Corporation. And they had every month in their magazine, a low cost, direct stock purchase plan where many of the investor relations departments of corporations allowed you through Better Investing to buy one share of stock. So I bought one share of Kellogg's, one share of Limited Brands, one share of CVS, one share of General Mills, you know, just things that I knew as a kid, just one share. And then when I was Sadiq's age, I started a custodial Roth IRA, and I put it on, like you said, I set it and forget it. I put it on automatic investment, and I had it invested in an index fund. And I was like, because I could not handle, like you said, I didn't want to be ruled day to day my life with the stock market. Yes, it's an important thing to know, but I didn't want to consistently be checking it and, you know, emotionally feeling the ups and downs and all of that. But I'm just now starting to invest in individual stocks in my retirement account and feel comfortable enough to have a certain strategy that I, you know, executed when the market went down in March and things like that. But it took 20 years. And I think one of the things that I noticed, especially with beginner investors, is, like you said, the hesitation to start. You know, you can't even begin to trust yourself if you can't make a decision. So you have to start somewhere. You have to at least buy something or invest in something or really test your theory, because if you don't, you're just going to be living in la-la land or this kind of theoretical abyss of the mind of, you know, oh, I need more information. I need more information. And all the time you're like missing out on dividends or you're missing out on
something. Yeah, I mean, I always say that, like, boring, the more boring and, like, plain vanilla you can be, the better. I know, like, most people look at the stock market and think, oh, high-flying, exciting, but really, you know, for, and this is for me, and it's in the market, it's in all things in life, you know, like, keep it simple. And the more simple that you're going to make it for yourself, the less you're going to stress about it, and then just the better off you're going to be overall.
Yes. Well, those are all the questions that I have. Do you have any closing statements, any parting words you want to leave with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is just, you know, remembering that, like you were saying, you have to start. And so often people will say to me, well, how much money do I need to start investing? And the answer is however much you have able to set aside today. So don't overthink it, you know, like I said, keep it simple and, you know, just trust that, you know, even though you don't have any experience, I can tell you that most people with stock investments don't have any experience.
Exactly.
And so don't be afraid. You know, it's a scary thing to put your money at risk. Ultimately, if you are doing it for the long term, you just have to do your best to sort of take that emotion out of it. Keep it simple, let the process work for itself, and someday you're going to look at that account and be really proud of yourself.
I agree. Thank you so much, Paige.
Thank you. Thank you. This is really great. I appreciate you guys having me on.
It was our pleasure. Miss Ann?
Yes, Miss Ione McNeil. We have to put a little light on your face there so that so we could see you. But Paige and Ione, awesome show. I just want to remind everybody that, again, this is Better Investing, and we are volunteers, so we're not investment bankers. Well, Paige is. This is a first for us, and making sure we say that, and we really appreciate you coming on. But what you've done for us is to give us a different perspective, and I think that was Ione's idea and the strategy of the show. The show is called My Investing Story, and everybody has a story. And what you've done for us today is to give us a different perspective on that story from the point of view of privilege. So we really appreciate that, taking that the mindset to another level, and each and every person listening really, you know, you have the opportunity to also be privileged by starting exactly where you are with whatever you have, as she said. And with technology and the platforms that we have today that are available to everybody, you can invest on your Cash App, okay, for $25 or $30. So there's really no excuse. Our desire is to continue to bring all of you, our listeners, a wonderful show and information about My Investing Story, and help all of us to understand you can start, like Paige said, right where you are. We want to encourage you to like the show, share the show, share your comments, and if you have questions, you can put them in the chat, online or offline, and we will definitely make sure, give us a little time, we will get back with you with the response to that question. So again, Paige, thank you for joining us. And Ione, you have any last words? We want to thank our volunteers that have been so very helpful. Laverne, you know, Doretha, everybody. John, everybody for making this show possible. So Ione, any other words from you before we wrap up?
Yes, I do just want to make two announcements. This coming Saturday, we're going to be having a CASA class. We're going to be doing a stock study on ADP. And then the following Saturday, next Saturday, September 19th, we're going to start our fall series of the Better Investing Beginner Investor class. It's a four-part series. It's four Saturdays, not necessarily in a row, but almost in a row, starting September 19th. If you do want to register for that, you have the link in the chat. And if you are listening to this at a much later date, you can just go to betterinvesting.org and find the South Florida chapter. Click on the local events link, and all of that information will be there for you to sign up.
Yeah, Ayana would also like to invite them to also join us on our Facebook group, and we'll make sure we put that in the events there. And we did have a shout out tonight also. So if you want to talk about our special shout out for tonight.
It's funny enough, we have like three shout outs. So the first shout out is for Michelle. Started a Vanguard account. I don't know what kind, but after last week's podcast with Howard Johnson said that the best time to start was yesterday. That night she opened up her Vanguard account. So congratulations to Michelle. Another kudos goes out to Cindy, who has been paying off her credit cards, extra 10% to the student loans, extra 10% to the mortgage. She has really been ramping up, and she is a teacher. So for all of the teachers and the lower wage professionals, you know, please be inspired by Cindy's story. And our last shout out for this week goes to Makita, who just bought after about six months of watching Walmart. She finally bought Walmart. In the process, she learned the difference between a margin account and a cash account and the importance of reading. And so through her cash account, she was able to buy Walmart. So congratulations to you, Makita. So those are our shout outs for the week. And I'll close by saying, Paige, you were a wonderful guest. I just want to thank you so much for your time and energy and all that you invested in our children, our Black and brown children in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. I knew we were going to connect when we talked about privilege, and you were an advocate. You know, you recognized the point of reference you come from, but also how easy it is for all of us to recognize that we're American citizens. We can easily just become investors, you know, no matter what color you are, your race or ethnic background, your religious, you know, background, any of those things. If you have a Social Security number, you can be a part owner in a corporation and make your money work for you. So again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I was inspired. I hope all of our participants and attendees and anybody that was listening was also inspired, because at the end of the day, we all, I think, want the same thing. You know, we want a certain level of financial freedom so that we can live comfortable lives. And it allows us to spend time with the people that we love. So again, thank you, Paige. We really enjoyed having you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody. I want to just remind everybody, please go to betterinvesting.org for more information and a program and a chapter near you. So with that, we're going to say good night and see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.